Now back to the Caring Generation on 630 KHOW with Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator.
Good morning and welcome to the Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator, spokesperson and guardian of the Caring Generation. In this hour, how many of you have homes filled with stuff? Closets stuffed to the brim, basements and spare bedrooms that you never visit because they're so full of stuff that you can barely make a path to walk through. Why do we have such an attachment to our things? What about people who carry this to an extreme? Is hoarding just a bad habit or is it more? Is it related to mental or physical health? Two experts join us in this hour, Dr. Randy Frost, professor of psychology at Smith College. He's an internationally recognized expert on obsessive compulsive disorder and compulsive hoarding. Also joining us, Dr. Michael Tompkins, a licensed psychologist and assistant clinical professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He joins us to talk about how hoarding can be a form of self-neglect. Are hoarders really a danger to themselves? Dr. Randy Frost received his PhD from the University of Kansas in 1977 and is currently professor of psychology at Smith College. He's an internationally recognized expert on obsessive compulsive disorders and compulsive hoarding and has published more than 140 scientific articles and book chapters on these topics. Dr. Frost serves on the Scientific Advisory Board of the International Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Foundation. Dr. Frost, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pamela. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. For somebody who's unfamiliar with hoarding, can you describe the appearance of a typical room in the home of a hoarder?
Well, the first thing you would notice in a room of a house with someone with a hoarding problem is rooms filled with clutter that cover every surface top so that those surfaces can't be used for their intended purposes. That would be the most apparent thing that you would see. If you take a look closer, what you would see is an apparent disorganization with all of those things as well. It's not like everything is well organized and just covering all the spaces, but there's a significant amount of disarray in the clutter.
And in your experience, is hoarding that somebody just, you know, they pick it up, or have they been that way all of their life, or is it an illness?
Well, it clearly is an illness. We see people with this problem beginning, typically between the ages of 10 and 15 years old. Now, it's not very severe at that point. It doesn't get to be a problem until a couple of decades later. And we see a lot of pretty severe hoarding by the time people reach the fifth generation, or fifth decade in life.
Around 50, okay. What's behind the inability to just clean it up and throw stuff away?
Well, there are a number of things that are behind it. And this is what makes it such a difficult disorder to treat. There are information processing deficits that these folks have, deficits in attention. There are a lot of attention deficit problems, problems with categorization. Most of us live our lives categorically. That is, we organize our possessions by category. But people who tend to organize their possessions visually and spatially so that when they get an electricity bill, they put it on the pile, and then they have to remember where it is. So it's like they have a three-dimensional map of this room. And so to the rest of us, it would look like a completely disorganized mess. But to them, they've got this three-dimensional map in their head, so they have a sense of where everything is. And that's just one component of the problem.
I was reading some information on the website, and I read that hoarding is affected by executive function or lack of disorganization, some lack of attention, and poor decision-making. We work a lot with people with dementia. Are those also issues that people with dementia experience, or does one come before the next?
Well, what we see in dementia is we do see some accumulation and clutter with dementia, but it's different than a hoarding disorder or hoarding problem, because in hoarding, in addition to these executive function problems, we see an attachment to possessions that we don't usually see in dementia. Now, sometimes in dementia, people are kind of attached to the way things are because they like the sameness. But with hoarding, there is an intention to use or to somehow need each of the objects people own. In dementia, typically that's not the case.
I had a client who was a hoarder, and the first time I went to her house, I was amazed. I walked in, and the whole living room, I mean, we're talking floor-to-ceiling stacked with stuff. How can somebody be attached to that much stuff?
Well, it's interesting, and the attachment seems to form whenever an individual possession is within their sight. And once it's no longer in their sight, they sort of forget about it. So in part, it's an immediacy effect that we see. So when someone's considering throwing something away, it's always something that's in their immediate visual field. Or whenever they think about something that they have, they have this feeling of need for it. But many of these items never get used. In fact, we have lots of cases of people who buy things and never open them, never open the package or never take the tags off of clothing.
And why is that? They just need it?
Well, in their mind, as they acquire these things, there's this intense sense in which they need this item or they want this item and they feel like they can't live without it.
Can you talk about the adverse effects of hoarding?
Well, there are many. The first and most apparent is an inability to use the home in the way it was intended. So if you can't sit on your couch, you can't walk through your living room, you can't sleep on your bed, you can't cook in your kitchen, all these things are impairments in people's lives. But sometimes this hoarding can get so severe that it endangers the health and safety of the individual living there, as well as people living nearby. When the clutter gets so high, it might collapse on top of you, or if it were to prevent your ability to get out of the house quickly if there is a fire.
Is there any connection between people who have lived during the Depression and when items were scarce to people now who hoard that you know of?
Well, that was our first hypothesis when we started doing this work a number of years ago. And so we asked questions about the people's experience with material deprivation early in life. And we found no solid evidence that is underlying this problem. Certainly a lot of people describe their attachments to something as needing them or somehow making up for being without. But for the most part, it doesn't explain very many cases of hoarding.
And is it possible for hoarders to really understand what they're doing and to try to change those behaviors?
Well, yes. There are a number of people who hoard who recognize this is a real problem. And we've developed a treatment program for hoarding, a cognitive behavioral program that seems to work reasonably well in treating people with hoarding problems. So it is possible for people to get control over this. Now, we can't talk about a cure for this because we still don't know for sure what causes it. But we can talk about a program that allows people to gain control over their home and maintain it in a way that's livable.
And talk about that treatment. What is it and how does it work?
Well, it's a fairly comprehensive treatment, and it focuses on the three main features of hoarding, the compulsive acquisition, the difficulty discarding, and the disorganization and the clutter that we see in the home. And each of those components is treated a little bit differently. Just as an example of what we do when we treat acquisition is we do a couple of very simple things. The first one is to get people, while they're in our office to generate a list of questions they think they should ask themselves before they purchase something. Typically, these are the things all of us do. Do I have money for it? Do I have room for it? Do I already have some of these? Then we have them put those on a piece of paper and carry them with them wherever they go. And if they want to buy something, as long as they pull out these questions and answer them, then it's okay to buy it. And what this does is it brings the context of their lives back into the decision. What we see in hoarding when people are out in an acquiring episode is that when they're looking at something they want, they forget about the fact that they don't have money for it, they don't have room for it, they already have a number of these. All that information is not accessible to them, in part because of this attentional problem they've got.
And so if somebody comes into a program like this, is it, you know, 2 months, 6 months, a year before they see results or changes, or is it longer than that?
Well, we've been experimenting with different ways of delivering this kind of treatment. Our first study delivered it in 26 individual sessions over the course of about a year, 6 months to a year, something like that. But since then, we've been working on developing self-help programs or facilitated support group programs that follow the same kind of therapeutic regimen. In about half that time. So somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 months, we can see a significant improvement in people's homes.
And can you talk about your website and where people could find some more information about this?
Well, the best website to go to is the International OCD Foundation website. The URL is ocfoundation.org. There's a hoarding center there that's got the most up-to-date and accurate information about hoarding. Thank you, Pamela.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Listeners, I want to give that website again. It's the National Obsessive Compulsive Foundation. It's www.occfoundation.org. And if you hit / and hoarding, you'll come on some tip sheets and information about hoarding. Our caring controversy of the week, you and your brother disagree on the care for your father. Your dad isn't really able to make decisions for himself without your help. What now? Visit thecaringgeneration.com to comment online. I'll share both sides later in our program. I'm Pamela Wilson. You're with me on Talk Radio 630 KHOW. This is The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability, reminding us that life is precious and our time on earth short. Coming soon, thecaringgeneration.com will offer education and information for caregivers not available elsewhere. My company, The Care Navigator, will continue to serve you, working directly with caregivers, older adults, and those needing assistance with life management or health issues. Call me at 303-205-7877 to make an appointment or for more information. Up next, Dr. Michael Tompkins, psychologist from the University of California, Berkeley.
Me like my baby.